So, Eric, I'm not going to lie. Today was a doozy.
Dang.
Do you have any words of wisdom that you might could give me to maybe cheer me up before we start the podcast?
Never give up, Nikki.
Aw, thanks.
Trust your instincts.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
You've become so strong, Nikki.
Oh, you were so kind.
Follow me this way.
Wait a second, Eric. Are you just quoting James McCloud?
What? This, you mean Star Fox's dad?
Yeah. Those sound a little bit familiar now that I'm thinking about it.
How can I quote James McCloud? He, you know, he's not alive anymore.
People quote dead people all the time. Eric.
Yeah, okay.
You can't just be quoting video games for advice.
I admit it. I steal all my best lines from James McCloud from Star Fox 64.
This is Press Any Button.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Nikki. And today we're talking about Star Fox 64, also known as the Lilat Wars in the PAL regions.
In some of the PAL regions.
Oh, in some of the PAL regions. My bad. It is a 1997 3D rail shooter developed and published by Nintendo for the Nintendo 64. It is the second installment in the Star Fox series and a reboot of the original Star Fox for the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, and that original Star Fox has been rebooted a number of times. I think there's either three or four reboots of it. two or three. Yeah.
If it's good, I guess. What would be the reason of rebooting it that many times?
It's a classic, I guess. Well, there was the N64 was kind of a reboot of the SNES version, but they added more stuff. And then I know they rebooted it for the Wii U and called it Star Fox Zero.
Okay.
And that isn't exactly a reboot either, but it's pretty close, pretty similar.
So is the history going to be as crystal clear as all this stuff?
Absolutely.
Because right now I'm already confused.
You're about to see clearly because the rain will be gone.
All right. Clear the rain, Eric. Clear the rain. I know last week you had a little bit of trouble finding history on the game because it was kind of old. And this game is kind of old also, so were you able to find a good amount of history?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff on this game.
Cool. This is definitely a game that I hear about often. We watch a lot of video game content on YouTube, like a lot of countdowns and random stuff like that. And I feel like I've heard them talk about Star Fox games quite a bit.
Yeah, and there's memes and stuff that have carried over from this game, like do a barrel roll.
Yeah.
Slippy crying for help.
No!
It's like, Fox, get the guy behind me.
Yeah, Slippy.
Yeah, poor Slippy.
Oh, Slippy.
But yeah, it's kind of embedded in our culture a bit, I feel like. And so, like many other great Nintendo franchises, Star Fox was created by Shigeru Miyamoto.
Nice. What else? What other games did he do?
You know, Mario, Zelda.
Oh.
Some of the most classic Nintendo games.
All the main games that, like, mean anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's created some pretty valuable IPs, including this one.
Cool.
So how Star Fox kind of got created is that there is a shrine near Nintendo's headquarters in Japan, which Miyamoto would visit often. And that shrine has Kitsune statues or Fox statues.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, the statues were the inspiration for Fox McCloud. And then, like, his co-pilots were inspired by Japanese folklore.
Cool.
I'm not 100% sure why they have Fox statues at some shrines. Mm-hmm. But I know, like, in some places they'll have, like, a key in its mouth. And it, like, holds the key to, like, the grain storage.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I have no idea about the deeper meaning.
If it's, like, a religious thing or anything like that.
I mean, I think there's probably, if it's part of the shrines, there's probably religious reasons why they were there.
Yeah, good point. So he just saw the fox and like was inspired and wanted to make a game with like a fox character.
Yeah, and also the arches too. Like if you kind of notice in the game, there are a lot of arches you can kind of fly under and fly through.
Yeah, there are.
And those arches are kind of like at the shrines as well.
Okay.
So I think it was the combination of the fox statues and the arches. And then, of course, the R-Wings you pilot in the game were inspired by X-Wings from Star Wars. And so I think that really kind of sums the series up. Cute animals plus Star Wars equals Star Fox.
Oh, yeah.
So did you kind of get that? It kind of seemed a little bit like a X-Wing?
Now that you say it, yeah. And especially the scenes where you're like in space and you're flying through all these rocks and meteors and all the crazy stuff.
Yeah.
That definitely is Star Warriors-ish.
Yeah, yeah. There are a lot of sci-fi references, but we'll get into those
later. Actually, even the level where you're on the ground, now that I think of it, that does kind of remind me of, like, the first episode. You know, when they have, like, that hover car that Anakin drives. The kid.
Like the pod racing?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were in the desert, obviously. Like, in multiple of the Star Wars movies, they have kind of like a desert look.
Yeah.
To the environment, and there's a couple, the level where you're on the ground.
Yeah, the landmass.
Definitely kind of reminds me of that. I also got really strong, like, what is that arcade game at Blue Ghost? Is it Galactic? No, not Galactica.
Galaga,
where you have to shoot, like, you're basically the little spaceship at the bottom. Yeah, and you can only go left and right. And you are shooting all the little, like, space invaders and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it reminds me of that game a lot, too.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of shooters in that same kind of style that like Star Fox is kind of, like, emulating a bit.
It's probably because I just played it not too long ago. And that's, like, my frame of reference.
Yeah, true.
Oh, and I just thought of this. Even the title of the game, Star Fox... Star Wars. I don't know why I just now thought of that, but yeah. It definitely is what you said, like all those things combined.
Yeah, very heavily inspired by sci-fi movies, especially Star Wars. But yeah, so the original Star Fox came out for the Super Nintendo in 1993, and it was a huge success. It got great reviews, it sold millions of copies, and so Miyamoto and his team immediately started working on Star Fox 2.
Mm-hmm. As one does when your game makes a whole bunch of money.
Yeah, so sequel, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, this did well. So, by 1995, Star Fox 2 was basically finished, but Miyamoto made the call to cancel the game.
Uh-oh. Was it not up to his expectations? Were they just taking way too long? What was going on?
There were actually a couple reasons for this. Starting with Nintendo's competitors, the PlayStation and Sega Saturn both released in 1994 and were much more powerful than the Super Nintendo and better suited for 3D graphics.
Mm.
And this caused Star Fox 2 to look really dated in comparison.
Yeah.
And the second problem was the Super Nintendo itself. So the Super Nintendo doesn't have any built-in ability to handle 3D graphics.
Okay.
Miyamoto got around this with the original Star Fox by including a special chip in the game's cartridge called the Super FX chip. Miyamoto and his team designed Star Fox 2 around an upgraded version of the Super FX chip, which would have made the game more expensive than like a regular game at the time.
Okay.
So like instead of charging like $60 for it, maybe they had to charge like $80 or something.
Yeah.
And so when you combine the two, that it looked outdated and they would have had to charge a lot more for it than a regular game. I think Miyamoto just kind of saw the writing on the wall and was like, yeah, this probably isn't going to do as well.
Yeah, and there's just like so much better competition out there for this kind of game.
Yeah.
Okay, I can see that.
And then the final thing was the fact that, you know, they had the Nintendo 64 coming out soon. Like, mm-hmm. Its release was imminent. It was like in 1996 when it was finally going to release.
Yeah.
So they kind of scrapped a lot of what they did. In an interview, Miyamoto said that roughly 30% of Star Fox 64's gameplay came from the original game, roughly 60% came from the canceled sequel, and the remaining 10% was original work done during development. So, yeah, he's crediting over 90% of Star Fox 64 to being the first game plus the second game they didn't release and okay. then a little bit, I guess, the newer graphics for the Nintendo 64.
I mean, I guess it makes sense. You put all that work and all that thought into something that no one ever got to see or play.
Yeah.
You might as well not let it all go to waste.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense to me.
So Star Fox 64 is kind of a remake and kind of a sequel.
Yeah, that's why when we were talking about it at the beginning, we called it a reboot of the original. Yeah. It kind of is, it kind of isn't, because it kind of expands a good bit on the original.
Yeah.
Almost to the point where it's like, yeah, this is almost like a whole new game. And I think they kind of did that again with Star Fox Zero. But So, yeah, in particular, Miyamoto said all range mode, multiplayer mode, and the Star Wolf scenario all came from Star Fox 2.
Nice.
So the ability to kind of free fly around certain areas. Yeah.
Yeah. So the first game, did you ever play the very first one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Was it only a rail shooter?
Yeah.
Like you were never off the rails?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So this does sound like a pretty good follow-up to the original. It's like what you usually ask for, everything the original has, plus extra stuff added on to make it more interesting.
So one new aspect of gameplay was the addition of levels that use the Landmaster tank and the Blue Marine submarine, which were conceived of by members of the development team in response to Miyamoto's suggestion that the game includes human-type craft.
Okay. They just didn't want everything to be in space, I guess. Wanted some stuff to be on the ground. But I don't remember the water level. Did we play that?
No, not together. Okay. That's on the hard route. It's like the one of the third.
Oh, yeah.
I was actually, when we're going to do our video for the episode, I wanted to go all hard route, and then we kind of got off the path a little bit.
That was probably my fault.
Well, it was my fault because I was going to replay the stage, and then I accidentally clicked the wrong button.
Oh, yeah. All right, so I never got to see the water level. Yeah, dang it.
You never got to see the submarine.
You'll have to show me later. Yeah,
we'll go back to it later.
Okay. I actually really liked the variation of those two levels because it did add like another interesting aspect of gameplay where you weren't in the air.
Yeah. To me, like, it was nice because, yeah, it did add some variance to the normal formula, but it also didn't go overboard with the amount that it was included.
Yeah,
it was kind of like a bonus for getting so far. It's like, oh yeah, now you get to play this cool level that's different.
Yeah,
the team originally intended the game to contain multiple underwater levels, but ultimately scaled back as they found that the underwater levels slowed down the pacing of the game.
Okay.
So yeah, originally there was more than one submarine level, but they're like, one's good enough. And it's okay, like the Blue Marine level, like, it's not my favorite level, but it is kind of a cool change of pace.
Yeah.
So Star Fox 64 was the first title to make use of the Rumble Pack peripheral.
Rumble Pack.
Yeah, which came bundled with the game in some instances, and that was the version of the game I had, was I got the one with the Rumble Pack.
That's pretty cool. How much were the Rumble Packs back in the day? I would imagine they were expensive.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how much more the Star Fox 64 was bundled with the Rumble Pack. Maybe it was a couple $20 more or something like that.
Which I must say, like, I didn't realize what a big deal the Rumble Pack was until you educated me. And now I know that it was a huge deal when it came out.
Yeah, you know, the controller that gave feedback, like, you know, it shook the controller. And that didn't exist at the time.
Makes it so much more realistic.
Yeah. Makes it feel like you're in the game.
Yeah.
And now controllers just naturally kind of vibrate, so we don't really think about it.
Exactly. That's why I was like, this was a big deal back then.
So Miyamoto stated that the development team struggled to utilize the Rumble Pack in a way that players understood, noting that during development, players were often confused as to why their controller was vibrating.
Oh, really? Yeah. I thought it made sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think their final version like made sense, but I think he was talking about when they were trying to develop it, trying to figure out where to put the rumble
at. So it was kind of tricky. Yeah, I could see that, like trying to decide exactly when and how long and all that stuff.
So the game reportedly had a marketing budget of $7 million, which would have been quite a bit at the time, And one of the marketing items was a promotional video, a VHS tape that went to all Nintendo Power subscribers. And I'm pretty sure I still have this VHS at my mom's house somewhere.
I don't know. I think your mom threw it away.
She might have
thrown
it away.
It's in a landfill somewhere. But dang.
Yeah, but the tape featured two agents from Sony and Sega kidnapping Nintendo employees and interrogating them to find out information on Star Fox 64. And I remember it got me pretty hyped for this game. And I showed it to you the other day. And what did you think of it?
It was pretty awesome. And I imagine, so they had $7 million to make this game. I would imagine.
Promote the game.
Oh, to promote the game?
Yeah, that was just the promotional budget.
$7 million just to promote?
Yeah, that was their marketing
budget. Whoa, that's insane. No wonder they were able to send out VHS tapes to like everybody. Because that is expensive. That's a lot of plastic, a lot of film. And then that's not even like counting how much they paid the actors, director, you know, editor and all that stuff to actually make the short film.
Yeah, I like this.
That is crazy.
I like the short film too. It was kind of like a sketch. Like it was pretty funny.
Yeah. So $7 million is about $13.5 million in today's value.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy.
That's an awesome budget to have for marketing.
Oh, yeah.
As someone who works in marketing, I feel like we always kind of get the shaft sometimes as far as the budget goes. But Nintendo does not play.
Yeah. And I remember their marketing, like, that worked. Like, I was super hyped for this game when it came out.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
You bugged your parents enough to get them to buy it for you for whatever.
I think it was probably like a birthday or Christmas or some holiday.
Yeah. Flag Day.
Second Christmas. Summer Christmas.
That's what rich kids get. I never got second Christmas.
You never got second Christmas. So in an interview post-release, Miyamoto said that while he was not 100% satisfied with the final version of Star Fox 64, he felt that the game made better use of the Nintendo 64's increased processing power than Super Mario 64.
Cool.
So what did you think about like the game graphically? Do you think it was better than Mario 64? I know you.
No, I don't.
Really?
I think it was better than Mario 64.
Graphically?
Yeah.
Because I think it looks way better than Mario 64.
You do?
Yeah.
Why?
There's just more detail in the graphics.
Like what graphics? Like the bosses?
Just the stages in general. Okay. Like there's a lot going on.
I just feel like they don't really show the characters as much in this game. Like when they do show the characters, it's like just their head, you know, because they're Anna.
You're talking about the actual 3D models of the figures aren't that great.
Yeah, just like the characters. And I thought, I don't know, I guess it looked okay, but I kind of like Mario 64 better.
Graphically?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It might just be because it's like more colorful and cuter, you know. I don't know.
I thought Star Fox 64 was pretty colorful. Especially those kind of like green stages like Corneria and some of the other stages.
I felt like it wasn't that impressive, but it could just be because I didn't play it right when it came out. You know, I'm just not playing it today or now.
I mean,
like 20 years later.
You don't really have to justify
why
you don't think it's better. It's fine.
Well, I'm just like, oh, is something wrong with my eyes?
Clearly. So Star Fox 64 received critical acclaim and was one of the top selling games of 1997, second to Mario Kart 64. It sold above 1 million units in the United States by the end of 1997, one of five Nintendo 64 games to do so. So yeah, so that marketing campaign, all that budget, like that definitely paid off.
Yeah, for sure. So do you know what the other games were?
The other five Nintendo 64 games? No. I could guess. Oh, Mario
you don't
Kart.
Have to, but yeah, obviously Mario Kart.
Ocarina of Time probably would have been up there.
Probably Mario 64.
I think that was 1996, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's hard to get all those years right.
GoldenEye would have been that around that time.
I never played that one, but I hear about it all the time.
Maybe Banjo-Kazooie? Okay, anyway.
Anyways.
Just speculating.
Yeah.
All right, so that's my history.
So, question, do you know how long it took to make the game?
So they started in 1995 and they finished in 1997. So
okay, so about 2 years.
Yeah, two-ish years.
All right, Which is not too bad. That seems like pretty normal.
Yeah.
Cool. All
right. So I got four fun facts for you.
All right. Let's go.
All right. Starting with fun fact number one. Have you ever seen the British puppet show Thunderbirds?
No. Have you?
Have you like heard of it or anything?
No.
Okay.
The
only
Thunderbird I know of is a car, I think.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's a car.
So I actually went back and watched a little bit of it.
Oh, you did?
Well, just some clips.
Okay.
So it came out in the 1960s. And that's Yeah, that's probably why we hadn't really heard of it.
Probably.
Yeah, it was a 1960s science fiction show made using marionettes.
Nice.
So like the
puppets with the strings.
Yeah, puppets with strings. Team America took really heavy influence from its style of puppetry.
Mm-hmm. The movie Team America?
Yeah. So just picture that, but less crude.
Oh, yeah, because it's the 60s.
Yeah.
Probably get the death penalty for doing like South Park humor in the 60s.
So Miyamoto was a big fan of Thunderbirds and said that the character animations in Star Fox were based on the simple style of puppetry from that show, which reduced the amount of animators needed to do like dialogue and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've noticed, like when they talked, it was just kind of like almost like a puppet.
Yeah, I did. I just thought it was because it was
old.
Because it was Nintendo 64.
Yeah. But yeah, he just wanted them to look, I guess, a little bit more like puppets. And I think the character models do look kind of like puppets.
I mean, that's an interesting choice. I guess it's okay. It's always cool to hear about old shows, too.
Yeah. So along with Thunderbirds as inspiration for the animation, there are several other references within Star Fox 64. So like the saucer battle on Katina is a reference to the film Independence Day.
Yeah,
with the big with the big saucer.
Mm-hmm.
The sequence in which players must escape Andross's lair is very similar to the Millennium Falcon's last minute flight out of the exploding Death Star.
Yeah,
at the end of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, I can see that.
And then General Pepper appears to be named after the Beatles album and song Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, as he also shares a similar outfit to the Beatles cover.
Okay.
And Miyamoto was a pretty well-known Beatles fan.
Yeah. So random. I love it.
So General Pepper is kind of like Sergeant Pepper.
Cool. Yeah. And Dr. Pepper?
And no, Dr. Pepper.
I don't know. Just kidding. Was that fun fact number two? Or was
that was extension
of fun fact number
one? No, that was fun fact number two.
Oh, okay. All right.
Just all the references. And you saw the influence, the sci-fi influence, Star Wars influence, all that. Okay, so fun fact number three. As the game approached launch, Nintendo became concerned that the title Star Fox could be considered too similar to the name of a German company called Star Vox.
Okay.
Thus, the game was rebranded as Lilat Wars in certain PAL territories.
Huh.
So, yeah, Star Fox, Star Vox.
I don't, you know, it's a whole letter difference. To me, that's not the same.
I agree. I would definitely be able to tell the difference, but I guess they were worried about it, so they rebranded it as Lilat Wars.
Yeah, I don't like that as much.
You don't like Lilat Wars?
I don't know. It just sounds too, like, hardcore with the word wars in it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, Star Wars has wars in it.
Yeah, it does.
And this takes place in the Lilat system, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, okay. That's, I guess they were like going to have that Star Wars reference in the title somehow, whether it's the star or the wars.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. And then my final fun fact, originally the development team behind Star Fox 64 themselves actually tried to provide the voice lines for the characters in the Japanese version of the game.
They tried to what the voice lines?
They tried to provide the voice lines themselves. So
they
tried to do all the voices.
Oh, no. Voice acting is a real skill and talent that you have to have or else it's going to sound really bad.
So in an interview, lead artist Takaya Emamura said, "We dubbed Star Fox 64 ourselves. We were all like, wow, this is going to be so cool." But when we showed it to people outside the team, they responded with, "Lame." We were told, "This is unforgivably bad." So we switched to professional voice actors.
That's so sad. They thought it was so good. Oh my God. It's kind of like when you're watching American Idol and those people audition and they think they're so good. They're so bad. At least their friends were honest yeah. with them and weren't just like hyping them up falsely. Like, yeah, that sounds great. You should definitely publish it like that.
I think one of the developers' lines did actually kind of survive. Like, they replaced most of the main characters, but mm-hmm. I think one of Andros, or one of the Star Wolf clonies, was actually still one of the developers.
I'm sure out of, you know, so many people, you're going to have, like, one guy that can deliver a line. That's really funny, though.
Yeah, I thought so.
I feel like that would be, like, if you and I wrote a short film or a movie, and then we cast ourselves
as the main characters,
the leads. Oh my god. Oh man.
Yeah, that'd
be but bad. Then we thought it was really good. Yeah, no, that's so funny though. Yeah, I like that one.
Oh yeah, so that's my fun facts.
Cool.
You want to talk about the story a little bit?
Yeah,
so
sure.
Why don't you just tell me what you think the story is?
Oh god. Okay, so Star Fox's dad, James McCloud, was on like a war mission or something, a space mission, some kind of mission, and one of his teammates turned on him, and then the other guy got kidnapped or something, captured maybe.
Okay, so yeah.
Okay, I don't know. Something, it went, the mission went wrong. James died, and then his son and the Star Fox team is like the next team to go out and do the mission, right?
Yeah, so that's okay. Pretty close. So yeah.
Okay, pretty close. That's pretty good for me.
Yeah, so the original team was James McCloud, Star Fox's dad.
Pygma.
Boo.
And Peppy. Yeah.
Peppy. So those three members. And so they go to investigate Andros, because Andros has been banned for starting a war with like biological weapons and stuff.
Yeah.
So he was exiled to Venom.
Okay. Yes.
And then they're like, oh, we're sensing some activity on Venom, so let's send the Star Fox team out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, Pygma betrays everybody. James is captured, and Peppy flees back. And then...
Oh, I had it mixed up. Okay. So James gets captured.
Yeah.
Okay. And Peppy comes back. Okay.
Yeah. And then 2 years later, Andros launches an attack across the Lylat system, and then General Pepper summons the new Star Fox team, now consisting of Star Fox, Peppy, Falco, and Slippy.
So wait, Fox McCloud, is he also called Star Fox, like as his name?
Star Fox is the name of the team.
The overall team.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. It's a little tricky there.
Yeah.
But all right, so I guess his dad loved the team so much, he was like, I'm naming my kid after this team. Star Fox, and then he names his kid Fox. I don't know.
I mean, he's a fox, so... And then, yeah, it seems kind of redundant to name your kid Fox if you're also a fox.
Yeah, I mean, his name was James. It wasn't also Fox, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Where does the name Star Fox come from?
Where's the logic in all of this? Okay. I guess it doesn't really matter. It's still fun.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, once you defeated Andros, if you go the hard route, then you get the special ending where, you know, you follow the ghost of your dad out of the inside of Venom's mm-hmm. planet or wherever they're at. Kind of a cool sentimental moment. And then you go back to Corneria and, you know, you give them your bill.
Your invoice.
Yeah.
I like that it ends on an invoice.
Because
so
you are mercenaries in this game. You're not mm-hmm. part of the army.
Yeah. They needed us.
So yeah, you want to move on to pros and cons?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so what's something that you liked about the game?
Okay, this game is action-packed.
Yeah.
There's zero downtime in this game. You're like always going, shooting. I hope your thumb muscles are worked out and ready to go, because you're going to be pressing A a whole bunch of times.
Yeah, I kind of had that too. It feels like it has a bit of a cinematic design to these mm-hmm. levels that, you know, make you feel like you're part of an action or sci-fi movie or something.
Yeah, which makes sense when you hear like all the inspiration for the game. Most of it is movies, so yeah. Definitely makes a lot of sense.
So one of the things I always liked about this game were just all the secrets within the stages. You could find like alternative paths. Sometimes you'd be like, you could fly through a series of arches or circles. Sometimes it was like destroying a certain number of enemies, and sometimes it was beating a boss in a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And your reward was always cool for pulling it off, because you'd basically get like a whole new level that you haven't played before. Because of course, the first time, like, you're going to keep going the easy route, like almost every single time.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, how do I get to these other paths? But as you like discover the secrets and stuff, then that kind of opens up the game.
Yeah. And you don't really have a lot of time to explore, you know, there's not really a lot of time where you can slow down and look around at stuff. So you kind of need to play the level through like normal a couple of times to learn like where you could possibly branch off and or not, you know?
Yeah. And the nice thing about that is like the levels are very short.
Yeah, a lot of replayability with the game, for sure. Yeah, with the three paths, I'm sure some people are going to want to go and get every single level on each path.
Yeah, and then you have like the addition of the medals too, mm-hmm. which adds another challenge. Like if you destroy a certain amount of enemies on each level, you'll get a medal for it.
Ooh.
And those medals are like permanent, so they'll stay on that level. Going forward. So if you medal all the levels, that unlocks expert mode,
mm-hmm.
which basically like you lose wings just by running into one thing and you die a whole lot quicker.
Oh God. I was losing my wings without it being hard.
Yeah. But if you medal all the expert levels, then you unlock the Landmaster and the kind of ground bazooka guy for the multiplayer mode. So kind of like,
cool.
So if you can do all that, you kind of expand the multiplayer options a little bit, which is neat.
It definitely does remind me of like the Mario games in that aspect, because I feel like most of the Mario games have that kind of additional challenge where it's like, hey, get all these big coins, you know, the like Yoshi coins or like, you know, whatever it is, and then it'll unlock a secret level or something. So
yeah,
that's kind of neat.
Yeah, I always thought that was fun. And like, I definitely did all that as a kid. I was kind of obsessed with this game. Yeah.
That's cool. I liked it. It is a rail shooter game for some levels, but then it like blows your mind and gives you levels where you're not on a rail.
Yeah.
And you have all this freedom to just go around wherever you want. It's still not, I wouldn't say open world or like...
It's a small map. It's it's a very small map that you're on.
But you have free range to go whatever direction you so choose. That was kind of cool the first time I played it, because I thought it was going to only be a rail shooter. But then it was like, oh, okay, this is more than that.
Yeah, it kind of opens up. And those all range mode definitely have a different difficulty curve than the on rails part.
Yeah.
I remember like my first time playing some of those levels in all range mode, it was just like really hard.
Oh yeah.
It was hard to adjust.
You definitely need to know more controls when it's open direction.
The flips and somersaults really are more beneficial at that point.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So yeah, I really like the soundtrack to this game. It kind of adds to that cinematic feel that you're getting through the levels.
Mm-hmm.
You have this kind of big orchestral kind of soundtrack, and to me that kind of follows along with like Star Wars or something where it's orchestral.
I didn't even really notice the music.
Dang.
I think it was because your stupid annoying teammates, which I'll talk about later, are always yelling at you for stuff.
Yeah.
Another thing I like about this game is that it's a shorter game. You can beat like the whole thing in about an hour.
Yep.
If you're a speedrunner, you can do it way faster than that.
Yeah.
But if you actually want to play all the levels and really play the game, yeah, about an hour you could probably
do casually. Casually, I'd say probably, an hour.
Maybe longer if it's your first time or you haven't played a lot of Nintendo 64 games like myself. But for you...
For me, it's roughly probably a little less than an hour. But yeah, if you're coming into it, it's probably going to take you more time just because... You do kind of have to repeat stages a bunch to kind of get used to them. And once you kind of have them memorized a bit, because it is like the same thing each time, then it becomes much easier.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So one of the things I liked was just all the different environments and vehicles. I think we already talked a little bit about this.
Mm-hmm.
Desert planets, snow planets, you have space stations and all sorts of stuff, submarines, tanks.
Yeah, I like the variation from level to level. It's not just like, oh, here's another space level. Here's another flying level, you know?
Yeah, every level feels distinct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another thing I really like about this game is it's very quotable. Yeah. Oh, man. If I was playing this back in the day with my friends, I imagine you would just, like, quote this game all the time. Like, no! Like, you could say that anywhere. I mean, I know other movies, and, you know, that could be probably from anything. But I thought the quotes were funny.
Yeah. Funny slash kind of annoying.
Oh, yeah. But I like how quotable the game is. Do a barrel roll.
And then my final pro is just, and I know you might disagree with me on this, mm-hmm. but to me, in this game, the controls are just, like, excellent. Like,
what?
They feel good. I mean, like, your control of the ship is great.
Yeah, I disagree on that one.
There is a little bit of a learning curve, but once you get down, like, the flips and the somersaults and stuff, it becomes kind of like second nature. It becomes pretty easy.
Sure. Well, that'll be a good segue to the cons, because for me, I thought the controls were very inconsistent. I would literally do the same exact thing, and it would take me 3-4 tries for it to do the move that I was trying to get it to do.
You're talking about the somersaults and flips and stuff.
Yeah, like the U-turns and stuff like that.
Sometimes it's like something small, like, okay, your gauge isn't quite 100% full.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, your boost gauge has to be full before you do any of those.
Yeah, I felt like it was inconsistent. And there is a big learning curve to this game. I feel like, it might be better if you've played a lot of other Nintendo 64 games. I'm not sure how much of this is Nintendo 64 and how much of it is the game, but I think for most of the C buttons, you have to do something with the joystick or the trigger and press the button at the same time. You can't just press the C button to make it do things.
Yeah, it had to do with the button mapping. So yeah, you were already using both the bottom C button, the left C button for something else.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to add that in so you have enough buttons, like, for everything.
There's so many buttons to press too. It's like right bumper speeds you up when you're going right.
Oh, you mean you can turn faster?
Yeah. And then the Z trigger, whatever, speeds you up when you're going left, right?
Or yeah, makes you turn left, turn right. That kind of makes sense.
It's just a lot. It's a lot to do. And then you have the three handles. It's all weird and awkward. I'm not a fan.
I like it. And the original Super Nintendo version, I think you could actually switch between regular controls and inverted controls. Mm-hmm. So, and I know you're not a big fan of inverted controls.
I'm not. It wasn't as bad for this game for some reason, because usually my mind will just not compute. But for this one, I don't know. I was able to get it okay. It didn't annoy me as much as it normally does.
So one of my cons was just the extremely needy and completely incompetent wingman that you have.
Yeah, I have that too.
They always need help from you, but they never return the favor.
They don't.
Especially in all range missions where there are a lot of enemies on the map at once. And for whatever reason, Slippy in particular always seems to need the most help.
He's a frog.
It's really annoying to have to keep, like, rescuing them every 2 seconds.
Yeah. And they could have at least given them more than one line of dialogue for variation. If they're going to be yelling at you every 1.5 second to help them, they could at least say it slightly differently so you're not just having to hear the same dialogue over and over and over again.
I will say that might have been a memory issue, just because I don't know how much dialogue the cartridges could actually hold.
Don't make excuses for them.
Sorry. Yes, they should be punished for that, for their indiscretions.
Anything else you didn't like about the game?
Yeah, my final con is just that the multiplayer always felt a bit bare bones to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you only have like 2 or 3 maps in each game type, and like, it's just a deathmatch basically.
Yeah. My con would be I wish that it was more co-op mode instead of versus mode. Because as soon as I heard it was versus mode, I'm like, I don't want to play that with Eric. You've played this game 5 billion times since you were like a child.
Yeah, you wouldn't have really had a chance.
Yeah, I'm like, I just started playing it. That does not sound fun to me. But if we could have both played the levels together and helped each other out, like... Yeah. I think that would have been really fun.
It would have been super cool, but I think it would have been beyond the N64's hardware capabilities to do that.
I guess so. They could do it now, though.
Yeah, the other thing I didn't like was just the fact that it was, like, quadrants. Like, even if you were playing on two-player, so, like...
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, if it's just the two of us playing against each other, like, instead of just a top and a bottom... Like, it still divides the screen into four squares.
Yeah, I did not like that.
It'll just have, like, a camera view on those other squares. And it's like, yeah, it doesn't really add anything.
It was weird.
Just, like, a weird, like, outside, like, flyby camera view.
Yeah.
It's like, I
guess it's just...
know why.
I'm just gonna chalk that up to it being an old system and, like, they couldn't do split screen and four screens.
They could, because they did it with Mario Kart 64. Huh. I'm not sure why. I think they just got maybe lazy towards the end or something. Or like, hey, it's like, I don't have time to figure out how to program this.
Yeah. You ready to get into some strategy?
Sure. I'll go ahead and start. Number one piece of strategy, do a barrel roll. Do a barrel roll all the time.
All the time, every time.
Yeah, you deflect lasers, and it really does help you stay alive.
90% of the time, it works all the time. No, I'm just kidding. Barrel rolls. Yeah, I wish I would have been better at the barrel rolls.
Yeah. You weren't doing enough. You just got to keep tapping those E and R buttons.
Yeah.
Never mind that your hands are getting tired.
Oh, my God. My thumb got so tired. Another thing is try to get all the power-ups and health and stuff when you're flying. You'll see, like, sometimes it's little rings. They could be gold or silver. And then sometimes there's, what is it, just like a floating P?
P?
It says P on it, right, for power-up?
No, there's these red orbs that say B on them for bomb. And then
there's those, but what's the other? I thought the other one said P on them.
The ones that look like a ship that have an L on them for lasers.
Oh, L. Okay, my bad. That's it. An L.
For lasers.
For lasers.
Obviously.
My bad. I thought it was P for power up. I'm just making things up. But anyways, you see these little things. They kind of look out of place, you know, fly into them and get them. It's going to make things a lot easier.
Unless you're intentionally trying to make the game harder, which... then by all means, skip them.
Why would you do that?
I'll say, make sure you fly through the checkpoint circle.
Yeah, checkpoint circle.
Even if there's something that looks scary blocking it, like fire.
We're not going to go there.
It's definitely worth flying through anyway.
That was the whole point. They did that on purpose because they knew that it would deter you from getting the checkpoint. And it did work for me.
It's a trick.
It was a trick. Another thing I have is there's a map in the bottom right hand of the screen, which is pretty helpful at seeing where you are in relation to your teammates and the enemies and everything else.
Yeah, sometimes with some bosses that are like super tiny on those all range maps, it becomes a necessity to use that.
Yeah, it's really easy to get lost and not know where you are if you don't look at the map.
And then my last one really is the bosses don't have iframes between hits. So you can potentially take a boss's health down really quickly if you know where to shoot it. Ooh. It's just a matter of like how quickly can you tap the button to get the lasers fired. I think you might have a limit to how quickly you can fire the lasers, but if you're really close, you can actually kind of like just go...
And how steady you can aim.
Yeah, how steady you can aim.
That's pretty hard to do.
So you can take down bosses super quick, or parts of them, or whatever.
Yeah. And my last piece of strategy is if you can, I think it does help to keep your teammates alive.
Yeah, it helps a little bit.
But it's kind of hard to do.
Like, they'll occasionally shoot something in a level, or they'll say something helpful if you haven't played a level before.
Yeah.
But other than that, I remember sometimes I would play and I was just like, I don't want to hear anyone on the intercom. I'm just going to shoot them as quickly as I can every single level just to get rid of. I mean, they don't die. They just go back to the ship.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just want to do this myself.
It's pretty evil, Eric.
Yeah.
Pretty evil.
Well, you have characters like Slippy who are pretty frustrating. But I'll say on those all range maps where you have a lot of enemies, if it's just you, mm-hmm. you'll get lots of enemies behind you if you don't have teammates.
Yeah. And it's hard to escape from that many ships following you.
You have to keep doing somersaults because you can't really escape with the boost or the brake.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes you can get them to go by with the brake, but they usually run into you in the process.
Yeah.
So, Nikki, what did you find about the future of Star Fox news?
Okay, so the only thing I was really able to find is, I guess there's a rumor that they're going to make a new one for the Switch 2 that's supposed to be coming out.
Yeah, soon. I think I saw that. There's like a leak or something where they found some things and some code suggesting they were working on a new Star Fox game.
Yeah, it would make sense. They do like to do big franchise games with a new console release. True. So it would make sense.
I can tell you about the most recent Star Fox game that was released.
That
kind of actually fits in with my history too. So recently, like the most recent Star Fox game to be released was in 2017. They released Star Fox 2 actually on the Nintendo Switch Online. The SNES Classic. You can play it.
Yeah. I actually saw that on there today.
So I thought that was kind of cool. So they kind of, released the canceled game just for, I guess, Nintendo subscribers or whatever.
Yeah. So you can go play it if you want.
Yeah. And I actually did play it.
You did?
Yeah, for a little bit. And it was okay.
Okay. Not as good.
Yeah. I mean, I can see some of the Star Fox 64 ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So moving on to the challenge.
Yeah.
I think everybody wants to know.
Everyone's dying to know.
Did you manage to beat Star Fox 64 while beating a mission on each of the three paths?
No.
Yeah.
I did try, and we did beat the game, but did not get one on each path. So
I think I remembered this game being easier than it was.
Yeah, you definitely did. You definitely were not taking into account the fact that I haven't played that much Nintendo 64 games. Because, that's a whole learning curve, I feel like, in itself.
Yeah, just holding the controller.
Yeah, and figuring out all the controls and everything.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you have to hold it a little bit asymmetrically.
Yeah, and some of those bosses are really, really hard. The levels are short, so that helps, but it's like, man, it's pretty difficult.
It's got to take advantage of the lack of iframes and just mash.
You really have to have a steady aim, which is kind of hard to do because the
joystick
is so sensitive. Like any little thing and you're like going across the screen, I felt like.
Thought it was too sensitive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, maybe not too, but just you have to get used to it.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So I guess I'll be rapping all by myself.
Let's hear a Nikki rap.
Flying high like a dream. Why lie when I can gleam? I try, but I wanna scream. My cry, it's getting a bit extreme. Boy, bye, that's the theme. Go apply a new regime. You die without a redeem. Ask why and become a funny meme. Side eye and weapons beam. Blue skies like water streams. My guy, we reign supreme. No lie, we're the Star Fox team.
Oh, Nikki rap.
Yes, I tried to do something different on that one. Did you notice, Eric?
Yeah, you're getting the early rhymes, rhymes. First syllable rhymes.
Yeah. You helped me out with that. You were like, you could do this. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. Nice. Trying to push myself.
Yeah.
To become a better rapper.
Switching it up.
Something I never thought would be an aspiration of mine. But here we are.
Very nice. All right. So I assume you picked out a game and a challenge.
Oh, yes, I did. And I picked it out today, very last minute. Because, well, honestly, I was thinking about picking Splatoon 3. But then I thought about it more. And I was like, it's like a little too similar to the Power Wash game. Like, not really, but it is a first-person shooter where you're, like, spraying out paint and splattering things with paint. And
I would say it's the exact opposite of Power Wash Simulator.
That's true. It is action-packed. But I don't know. I was like, maybe I'll save Splatoon for a later day.
Yeah, next season.
And I'm going to go with a game that I've never played before, but ooh, it nice. Looks really cool, and it was 50% off on Switch. So we're going to see how it is.
All right, yeah.
It has pretty decent reviews. It has like a 9 out of 10 on Steam out of like thousands of reviews. So we'll see if we like it or not. But it's called Night in the Woods. Have you ever heard of it?
Night in the Woods.
Mm-hmm.
No.
It came out in 2017, and it's a adventure video game. But from when I was looking up the challenge, I think it might be a bit of a dungeon crawler game also. Hmm. So, your challenge is complete at least 4 playthroughs. What? Of the game.
Jeez, that's a lot of this game.
It sounds like it, but from what I read, I think that's like pretty much what you need to do to beat the game is to play through it 4 times. So,
okay.
I haven't played the game though, so I'm only just going off of my interpretation of what I read online. But I didn't want to read too much because I didn't want to spoil the game, right?
Okay, yeah.
So
that is tough when you're trying to figure out a challenge when you haven't played a game.
Yeah.
I get it.
So hopefully this is a good challenge, but if it's not, don't be too mad at me. I tried my best to come up with something very reasonable this time and not something that's impossible like I accidentally did last time. So
all right, sounds good. We'll see how it goes.
All right, till next time.
All right, bye.
Bye.